Okay, so my name's Marlene. I'm wanting to become a middle school English teacher, hopefully.
I'm Petra. I'm going to be certified in 6th through 12th. My goal is high school, teaching English.
Hey guys, my name is Lucas, and I want to do secondary history, and I also would like to coach basketball as well. So, those are our dreams.
So yeah, we're just going to be hanging out and talking today about some of our different favorite strategies that we've seen be really successful within the classroom, and things that have been successful for us as well. So I don't know. Do one of you guys want to talk about your strategy?
Yeah, that and Dr. Prosser told us we had to like talk to each other. Okay, so I'll start off with my strategy. So my reading strategy has to be metacognition. Yeah. So that's pretty much kind of like going through our own like going through a different person's like thinking process. I decided to choose this one because in high school, like I never had teachers that like wanted to know like how I thought everything out because like one, they weren't very hands-on, and then two, on top of that, they were not very good teachers. That's just my opinion. That's just my
Could
opinion.
you say that's why you like, not to get off topic, but like why you want to
Become a
become a
teacher?
teacher?
Yeah. Yeah,
Because of
just 'cause
those
like
things.
I've always struggled with reading. Obviously, English was not my first language, and I just want to be that teacher that helps them the best that I can, even if it is like I have to stay after school and help them. But pretty much I want to implement that in my classroom by kind of like having like different points in the unit where we talk about like, oh, you're struggling with this, like how can I help you to clarify that, or how can I help them get to a better understanding, or how can I reword stuff. In my practicum I did see this a lot. I actually was in the practicum, in two different practicums this semester, and I was at Santa Fe Trail with Mr. Gloss. He's actually a freshman English 1 teacher. I liked his class a lot because he also talked about like he had like different points of the semester where he actually like checked in on the students like during the unit, and he would like talk to them and be like, "What are we struggling with? Like, why haven't you turned this in? Are we like, do we need help? Do I need to get you some help?" And I really appreciated like seeing that because one, like I said, I never really had a teacher that cared that much. And two, it just kind of shows like this is actually a teacher that wants to help you. This is a teacher that wants you to succeed. And I honestly admired that.
And I think that's like really important to take it like a little further outside of literacy strategies and just understanding that this is how you make sure that your students feel safe and comfortable, because I think that's what helps further their success within your classroom. And when students don't feel safe, they're going to lack a lot of those skills that you need them to understand. And I think it's really admirable that you can kind of take a step back and recognize why you want to become a teacher and why certain things make sense to you, such as the metacognition. Like, I think that's really admirable.
Thank you.
I like the one-on-one thing too.
Yeah,
Like,
just.
just even, yeah. And I know that it's not possible for, like, if you go to, like, a school with, like, however many hundreds of students and stuff like that. But, you know, it's still, like, a good way to, like you said, make sure they're, like, safe. And that's, I feel like, the best way that they can learn is if they feel safe. And the one-on-one thing, I mean, that's the way I feel like I got through things.
Yeah.
Was just going up to them and be like, hey, I need help with this, so.
Yeah, like that's my goal in my classroom, kind of like giving them like a safe place where they're able to like talk about like where they're struggling with, where they need help with. Even if it is like in a different class, like I can still kind of get them the resources that they need, or talk to a teacher and be like, "Hey, so and so is like struggling, but they don't feel comfortable to talk to you about it, but they told me about it." And I feel like, yeah, I'm like really trying to be that teacher for them.
Yeah, I think that's really, really smart, and I mean, it's just awesome that you want to do that because I think a lot of teachers don't recognize that literacy is not just in an English classroom. I mean, you have to read the instructions for your science labs. You have to read your word problems for math. And if a student is lacking in that, but that's not what you're focusing on and you don't know how to help them, they're going to fail in every aspect because reading is an essential part of life. And then further understanding like how everybody reads differently and knowing that you have to have those different resources in order to provide like an achievement in literacy.
Yeah, No, yeah, I get your point, don't worry. But yeah, that is like my main reading strategy, in my opinion. Like, that's something I'm striving for. That's something I'm willing to work a lot more towards. Just because, also, on top of that, I don't know if I ever told you guys, I used to be a psychology major. So I love being inside the brain. So kind of like getting through a person's like brain and like their thought process in my class can help me as well, kind of like get into the psychology of it. So, okay, what about your guys's? Like, what are your guys's reading strategies and how would you guys like implement it in your classroom?
The one I really liked in Dr. P, ain't talking Peppa, but Dr. Prosser's class. I liked the jigsaw one we did. Just like splitting everybody up, and this is one of the kind of things I want to do with like history too, is like if you split everybody up and like have different perspectives of each, like you could say battle, war, policy, and government and stuff like that. I feel like you split them up and then have them like master that part of the lesson, and then you mix and match them. It not only helps them learn the material better from each other, but like learning from each other is also a big social emotional strategy too, that is really important. So that's what I want to do, is like, make the classroom like a social setting where it also is a learning setting, so where kids can like meet other people, or like even if we have a new student or something like that, I feel like it would really help them like get to know each other and also learn at the same time, which I think is really cool. And it also, like, when you master your quote unquote home base of what you're learning, then you're like really good on that, really set on that, and then you move on to the next person and then they teach you. It's like a full circle kind of thing, so you kind of get out of it what you put in. If you put in like a couple sentences, another student's probably put in the same amount of effort. But if you started off really well and then start that domino effect, I feel like it'd be a really good strategy. So.
Yeah, I think a lot of teachers kind of lose focus in the fact that students, especially when they're younger, like, I mean, it doesn't stop even when you're in college, that students are social, and taking away that aspect because a lot of students do learn better from each other. I mean, we learn about how some students need to be told the instructions by one of their friends, and then it clicks for them because they're being told directly by somebody else rather than somebody telling the entire class. And allowing students to, like, if you hand them an article, rather than being like, you have to read this entire 20-page article, you're saying, like, here's your group of four students, you're each going to read five, and then you're going to tell your group members what it is that you specifically read about.
Because another thing, because if you don't, then you're just gonna sit there and be like, yeah, I didn't read it. So you're kind of like, you're not only like doing it for yourself, but you're like for other people, you're letting them down too, if you don't read your own article or part of the story. And I think that's also a good part too, because when you're like being social and when you're like building those friendships, it makes it easier, I think, to learn. And like what we're talking about with Marlene's, a safer environment, I feel like that's really huge. And like when you have like quote unquote history term allies in the classroom, and it's just nice, like, because I've seen it before. It wasn't in one of my practicums like Marlene's, but like, I mean, and it was in our classroom that we're taking now, but like even in high school, it's one of the things that we did. Like, we took a long, really long article, but like broke it down into like separate views, especially like the different sides of like World War II or Civil War or something like that. And like you'd figure out like what perspectives they were seeing it from, and then you read it, and then we'd either jigsaw it, debate about it, talk about it like that. And I really like the term jigsaw puzzle, because it puts everything together and puts everything in perspective. So yeah,
Also, just because I've actually researched jigsaw for a little bit in one of my classes, it is actually like one of the top one strategies or the top 10 strategies that they use a lot in classrooms. Just because, like Petra said, it is better learning from like a different peer, because when you're learning like how they interpreted the information and kind of like getting that info, like how they explain it to their peer, it may be a lot more simpler compared to the teacher. Because let's face it, we are a lot smarter than our students, obviously. And, like, we may forget, like, they are not on the same reading level as us. Like, we are at a different reading level, and kind of, like, getting into that, like, mindset of, like, their age group is a little bit harder for us because we haven't, obviously, we're not that age anymore. And I think, like, having someone else, like, the same age as them and almost, like, the same reading level as them can help them be like, oh, okay, so that makes a lot more sense compared to what the teacher was saying, because they might look at you and be like, looking at you like with deer in headlights.
And I feel like it gives the students a lot more freedom to like sprout out to, especially, I know I keep going back to the social thing, but like, you know, you could, if it gets out of hand or like, you know, gets out of line a little bit, because, you know, you're kind of just leaving your students to talk and they could get off topic and stuff. I feel like if you had like a list of like guided questions for each section or for each group, for each home base, quote unquote, then it would work out a lot better. Keep students focused and, you know, still build those relationships in the classroom. So I think, that's mine. Petra, would you like to continue with these strategies and give us your favorite one that you've heard or seen before in the classroom?
Yeah, of course. So I think, you know, kind of like Lenny and Lulu had said, something that I kind of struggled with growing up was hearing the word annotations and what teachers expected of that. Because I think something that I struggled with was I would go and look for like the last sentence in a paragraph or the first sentence just to kind of see like what that introduction looked like or what that idea for that passage was, and that is all I would do. I didn't really realize until I'd gotten to college, you know, being a double major of English and education, how important annotations can be, but not only how important they are, how many different ways you can work with that. Because it's more than just highlighting, it's more than just underlining, it's, you know, if you highlight a passage and you like box it, or you highlight a quote or a line, like whatever it is that you're highlighting, and then whether it be in a different notebook, whether it be just in the margin, like writing yourself a little note, like, okay, so here's this word, you know, like here's what it means, or here's this quote, and it's like, what does that mean to me? And just kind of marking where it is that maybe you're struggling, or like the ideas that come along when you have those. And I think those annotations go along really well with like what we call doodle notes too, because there is scientific evidence behind that your brain works better and you retain more information when you are not just like stationary reading something. So allowing your students to doodle and annotate at the same time. And even if their annotations are doodles, you know, like if you're reading Hamlet and you're talking about the duality of good versus evil, and you have to draw in the margin like devils and angels, like things like that to kind of get your brain going with what you think. And I think annotations is one of my favorite ways to do things. And I tend to do it with like a notebook next to whatever text it is that I'm reading, and just moving my hand along and like writing down things as I go, as well as like page numbers, so I can remember where everything is.
Yeah, I do those kind of like going through and like just even like putting like a dash and then like writing something that I can go back to, like what you were saying, and go back and be like, oh yeah, this is what this is about. But like, I feel like for education wise, like just simplifying everything that you can, you know, and going through, I mean, even in articles and for my area, from history, it's just like you can go through and simplify stuff by doing what you're saying, doing stuff like that, devils and angels, which is, you know, very useful. But I feel like, yeah, going through and like even drawing pictures and stuff like that, I mean, to make it, you know, more visual, I mean, like the science that you talked about behind it's pretty cool, because I mean, I feel like when I go through and I, like in my English classes, like in high school and stuff, I would go through and like make like a doodle or something that helped me remember what happened in that chapter on that page number kind of thing. So like when you go back and ask you, what did this character do in this scene, and you're like, oh, they did this, you know, kind of thing, which is pretty helpful. So
yeah, and it also teaches them like college readiness skills, because
it's a good
coming,
point, Miley.
Yeah, like coming into college, I never learned how to annotate.
Really?
Yeah, I never really learned how to annotate, just because, like I said, COVID COVID messed everything up.
COVID messed everything up.
But, yeah, I never learned how to annotate correctly. Like, whenever they did teach us, they would kind of be like, just underline what you feel is important. I felt like the entire paragraph was really important.
Right.
So, like, they never told me, yeah, you can write in the margins, or, like, yeah, you can write the general idea. But it wasn't until, like I said, got into college and I had to learn all these strategies that I never learned how to do it in high school. And I think kind of like teaching that college readiness strategies in high school is really important, because like if they ever come into college, they're like, I feel prepared, I feel ready. Like, you're literally just setting them up for success. That's like another thing, like us as teachers, we want to see our students succeed.
Yeah, and I think it's also making sure that they're not feeling certain ways, because I know like when I came to college, I had a bad taste about annotations in my mouth. Like, I hated it. Because I was the doodler. Like, I would draw little pictures, I would write little notes, and I mean, I had teachers who were straight up like, I will take points off if you doodle. And that was the best way for me to learn, is like, I had to keep myself busy, and who knows why that is, but, you know, like, I could not sit still when I was doing something. It's just not how I retain information. I mean, like, here I am right now, sitting here waving my arms as I'm talking, like, I just can't do that. And I think recognizing that students need certain things to be successful, and if you're asking them to do something that already kind of has an intimidating word when you think about it, like, like if you're telling somebody, I need you to annotate this, that sounds a little scary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, like, let your students do what they need to do. And I think doodling is just really important. I think the annotations are really important, but, you know, like Lenny was saying, like, setting your students up for success so that way they actually understand what it is that they're doing and supposed to be looking for when they go on to further their future careers.
Yeah.
And I also think, like what you were saying, like, accommodations too. Like, what we've talked about in this class a lot is not all students are the same, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, like, one of those things where it's, like, you know, if you got, like, did you really get, like, points taken off if you...
Yeah.
You see, I feel like that's bogus.
Yeah, they would take, like, they would take upwards of, like, 10 points off if you doodled.
Yeah.
You guys had some strict teachers.
I guess.
Had some shitty teachers. Kind of going back to what I said, did not mean to cuss, but I went to a very, like, weird school. Not weird school. I came from, like, a Title I school. I'm from Wichita, and, like, I didn't have, like, teachers who really wanted to, like, try to help us. And on top of that, I was, like, working two jobs at the time. So, I feel like my teachers were not as hands-on as your guys's. Like, you guys had, like, points deducted, I think. I forgot who said that, honestly.
Petra
said it. So that's why I'm like, my teachers didn't really care. Whenever I wrote a paper, I got 100s out of it. So, yeah, what type of schools did you guys go to?
Well, I went to a 3A in Missouri, and it was kind of the middle of a road between, like, a very big school. I guess it would be more on the, like, smaller school side. I only graduated with, like, 50 kids, so it was fairly small. But our sports were big, but that's another conversation. But yeah, our...
don't flex on us, man.
Yeah, I think our teachers were, like, a little different. Like, what Petra was saying earlier, there was some... they weren't as strict, but I feel like there were some points where they were like, yeah, maybe this isn't what I was looking for. I'm going to dock points for this. And I think they did that to make it seem like, you know, they wanted to pull more out of you instead of just, like, the bare minimum. Or, you know, the doodling, what we were talking about, they could see that as, like, a distraction. So it's just interesting to see the perspective of, like, what my school was and what Marlene's school was. But, you know, I just wonder how it is at, like, a bigger 5A, 6A school like those.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, so I went to a 6A school. I graduated with, like, just under, like, 500 students. And I think it was a little bit harder in a sense where, like, it kind of aligns with Lenny's in the sense of, like, teachers, like, kind of didn't care, but I think it wasn't because they didn't care. I think it was because they had so many students to focus on that there never really felt like there was an ample amount of time to connect with the students.
Because I know that that's something I struggled with, is I felt like my teachers didn't, like, necessarily care about me. Because, like, I think they could obviously see how I would change, like, daily. Like, if I had a bad day, I think they would notice it. And then they would just kind of, like, get on me about, like, being rude or, like, not participating. Like, things like that, rather than taking the time to actually be like, okay, this isn't, like, this isn't her usual demeanor. Like, obviously something's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So...
kind of like seeing our dynamics, like how we came from like different schools. Like obviously Lucas came from a small school, and then Petra came from like a very big school, while I came from like a Title I school. And it was very big, but it was in like, it was pretty average, if you get me. It was kind of in the middle. And I kind of, I'm really glad we have like that element in our group, that we all came from like different high schools and the backgrounds of it, because it also gives us like different perspectives of like how we do like our reading strategies or how our teaching styles are going to be different. I also noticed like in high school we didn't really have like a lot of like vocabulary strategies. Like I was like in anatomy and physiology. Honestly, I would have gone into the bio field, but honestly, anatomy and physiology, like they had so many vocabulary words. Like they didn't have like, the teacher, she didn't have like a good strategy. Granted, like kind of like going off of like what I'm learning now as a future educator, in my practicum we had to do like, or in one of my practicum classes, we had to like look up different strategies, and all in the content areas that are in that practicum, we all realized like there's not that many vocabulary strategies. And I kind of like the strategy that Dr. Prosser posted on her Moodle, which is like quick writing, because like it gives them like the word, and then they're able to like see, like, write, oh, I have no idea what this word is, or I have somewhat of an idea, kind of, like, giving them, like, a pre-assessment. And I feel like that is really important, because you get to see, like, what student knows what word. And, obviously, like, English, we have a lot of words that we need to remember. History, you guys have a lot. Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
A lot of days, mm-hmm. a lot of dead people that we gotta remember.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's what's crazy about vocabulary, is because, like, you know, when you think vocabulary and you think science, you're thinking, like, okay, mitochondria or muscles or chromosomes, like, things like that. But it's a lot more than that. It's, you know, when you think about history, it's making sure that your students understand the difference between the Industrial Revolution and, like, the Revolutionary War, because there's similar words in there and things like that. And I think what's nice about the quick write, like Marlene was saying, is that you get to pick those words for them, because like you're recognizing what's important, but then you can take it further and like allow students to skim a passage and make sure that they understand what words mean, so that way you can help them if they don't recognize it and you didn't personally think to provide it to your students, and like also making sure they know how to pronounce it. Because I feel you on the being in a different field. Like I wanted to be a lawyer, and that's what I wanted to do, but I didn't know enough about it, just because I felt like I lacked a lot of the knowledge of just very basic everyday terms, like within a law element.
Yeah, I think vocab is definitely more than just giving our students the words and having them figure it out. You know, like this quick writing thing that we've been talking about, it's a good way to like brainstorm and like have the students like, and I think one thing that we're like missing here, and like that's pretty huge, is like Bloom's, like the level of understanding, and then building off of that, you know, as a reading strategy is pretty pretty important. And then you can use that level of understanding, because in one of my practicums, and you know this relates to, is when the teacher went up and he wrote like an event like Pearl Harbor. He wrote Pearl Harbor on the board, and then he gave the marker to each student, like, and have them to come up and like write something that they knew about Pearl Harbor. Like, and I know it's like, so we're still talking about vocab. It's just like the event as a whole. They'd write, you know, what, like the date or something that's up there, and then he'd look at it and he'd be like, oh, okay, this makes sense. Like, this is what some of them know, and this is some of the things that they're missing. Let's go back and figure out what they want, you know, to what they already know, and then we can build off what they already know, and we could use quick write. We could, you know, just not giving them the words to figure it out, and then, like what you guys are talking about, the medical field, they're lawyer. But, you know, like the different vocab, like I feel like if we were taught these different strategies, then we would have much more interest in, you know, like, and know a lot more words.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, like, when you think about it, I think the last time I did a genuine, like, vocabulary list, I was probably in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And that was purely because I got extra credit for, like, writing the vocab list, like, in cool, like, in different places and things like that. But those vocab lists were specific for, like, spelling tests.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that we kind of lose sight on, is that, one, you shouldn't know vocabulary just so that way you know how to spell it. Because, like, yes, spelling is important. You want to be able to do that. But at the end of the day, understanding what something means is so much more important.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can't think of a single time in high school where, even college too, where I was given a vocab list and it was a genuine, like, vocabulary list with definitions and pronunciations and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were more just kind of like word banks and things like that, so.
Yeah, and then, like, kind of going off, like, a lot of people do not learn naturally, just, like, having, like, postcards and, like, seeing them, or the note cards and being like, okay, this is the word, and then, like, turning around the definition. Like, I don't think everyone learns that way, just because, like, we all, like, obviously we all have, like, different diverse learners in our classrooms, so I feel like we need to find, like, a different way to try to, like, implement that strategy into our classrooms. That way it's, one, helpful for them, and two, it's also, like, helping them in a way for them to later take it on to college if they want to pursue their career, if they want to pursue a career, my bad.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, kind of a good way to think about also the, like, when you think about our different backgrounds and what that looked like, the words that I needed to know in my everyday language were probably very different than what Marlene needed to know in her daily language and what Lucas needed to know in his daily language and things like that. And I think that's a big reason why vocabulary is extremely important. I don't really know about you guys, but I think that these strategies are things that I've seen be really successful in the classrooms. They've been really successful for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I'm definitely going to use them, you know, when I have my own classroom.
Yeah, I'm really glad, like, we actually went through these strategies, because I can kind of see, like, what strategies I want to use in my classroom and how I want to teach it and how I feel about them personally as a student, because, like, obviously we were all students first, and I think that this is like a really great idea. Yeah,
I think it was also beneficial just, like, going through and reading and then also seeing, like, we did some of these, if not all of these, as an example in class, you know, so it was pretty, I think, beneficial. And like Marlene said, you know, we've experienced it, so we know, you know, what the students are, like, or how they act and, like, what they think is the most beneficial. And, like, now we're on the other side of it, so we can kind of, we're on the outside looking in now, so now we have to, like, still have a student's perspective in a teacher's mind. So I think it's really beneficial for us.
And for all you Lit Hit Kit listeners out there, just remember, what works for us does not necessarily mean it's going to work for you, but these are the strategies that we have found to be the most successful. So share with us what some of your favorites are and what works for you, and, you know, just drop a like.
Thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on Lit Hit Kit.
All copyright issues are to be sent to Dr. Prosser's Pug. This is not affiliated with Dr. Pepper.